This is a no-surf music, Burning River Fireside Chat. With guests, Harpeth Rising. I'm your host, Jason D. Diesel Hammond. For the best in Americana, alt country, indie rock, and more, point your browser to nosurfmusic.com.
This is another edition of No Surf Music, Burning River Fireside Chats. I'm your host, Jason D. Diesel Hammond, and joining me today are the four members of Harpeth Rising. So go ahead and introduce yourself, guys.
Well, my name's Rebecca Reedlin, and I play the banjo.
I'm Jordana Greenberg, and I play the violin.
I'm Maria Zimaglio, I play the cello.
I'm Chris Burgess, and I play percussion.
Okay, and once again, thank you for joining us, guys.
Thank you.
For all of our listeners and readers here at No Surf, hopefully by now you have heard of this group, if only because I've kind of been pushing them a little bit lately. They currently are featured review for their last album, The End of the World. And you guys also won a Surfy Award this year for the Song of the Year for one of the songs off of that album. And placed quite well in a couple of other categories, I have to say. Honestly, it was really close on Album of the Year between you and our friends David Wax Museum. So all I can say is, you know, try harder next time.
Okay. Well, you know, we really held back a lot.
I'm sure you did. Yeah. You could tell. There were a few of you just, you know, we need another track. Let's just, like, cut something. I don't know. No, but it was an amazing album. I really enjoyed it. And I'm glad that Jordana found me. And submitted it for review, because there are so many good bands out there, you can never hear of all of them, and so it's great when people take the time to actually, you know, contact us and throw something on our radar. So before we talk a little bit about the history of the band and what you're up to now and all that, I want to help our readers and our listeners kind of place you, because your music is really hard to classify. I've been calling it kind of a string folk thing, because that's the closest I can get, because to me, a lot of your lyrics are more folk-based than anything else, but because you're sort of this string band formation, you're really not like anything else out there. You've got a little bit of bluegrass in there, you've got a little bit of more traditional folk kind of stuff, but what do you guys feel, you know, is the middle of your music? What would you describe it as to somebody?
I think that probably we identify most with the term folk, even though that's, you know, that encompasses a lot of different things. Mm-hmm. It's also just a term that I heard personally and experienced throughout my childhood, and I always thought of my dad, David Greenberg, as a folk singer, you know, and so I think that we're a folk group. I think you're right, our lyrics are very lean towards folk, and maybe some of our arrangements have more of an orchestral side to them and more of a, you know, more of a bluegrass side at times. Mm-hmm. But ultimately, all of that falls into folk music anyways. So.
Okay. So I guess that actually sort of brings me to my next point, which makes you guys particularly interesting as sort of that folk band, is a lot of folk groups are self-taughts or, you know, picked it up from their local traditions or whatever. And to some degree, you guys are all of that, but you're also all classically trained. And you met at Indiana University, correct? I got that right. I didn't switch it.
Okay. You were right.
That's okay.
I don't understand why we can't just figure out one way. Is it University of Indiana or is it Indiana? You know? Every state has it differently, but yeah. I got it right, so good. So you guys all met there. And in one way or another, you know, you had different experiences that brought you from sort of that classical world where you guys had worked a lot, I'm sure, and some of you are very renowned, but brought you back towards that folk music where I know some of you, like Jordana was saying, sort of grew up in that milieu. So if each of you could just sort of tell us a little bit about, you know, why you chose to play this kind of music instead of, you know, shooting for the Carnegie Hall concerts or something like that. Not that, you know, you certainly couldn't still, but I'd just be interested to know what brought you this kind of music. So why don't we start?
Well, I, in some ways, I'm probably the most self-taught in the group because I taught myself the instrument that I play.
Mm-hmm.
Although I went to school for the viola, and so I started playing the banjo by watching YouTube videos. Jordana invited me to a bluegrass festival in her hometown of Paoli, Indiana, the Lotus Dickey Festival, and so that's kind of where I first became acquainted with the banjo, and so I bought one a week later and immediately started watching as much as I could and just tried to pick it up from there. And I think there are a lot of things that gravitated me towards the banjo specifically, partly just that it's so weird. I felt like I could, you know, really play it my own way.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point in kind of my musical life, I really wanted to kind of learn my own way to play an instrument and really teach myself something because I had taken so many lessons on different instruments. And I think one thing that gravitates me towards folk music is the collaborative songwriting. I love being able to write in a social environment, and classical music writing can be very lonely, and I love kind of the way that you can all learn about each other and kind of really get an idea out there in a way that will be intelligible, because if it makes sense to four people, you know, it's more likely to make sense to a lot of other people rather than just you with your own ideas in your head and bringing them out there.
Okay. Before we jump around to the rest of the table, I just want to ask, when you were teaching yourself banjo, I know there are a plethora of wonderful YouTube videos out there, but who are the people that you most sought to emulate, would you say?
I started off watching a lot of Pete Seeger and Abigail Washburn, but I watched everything I could, and then it went beyond banjo videos. I started watching Spanish guitar videos and started trying to copy Spanish guitar players. I watched this one guitar player in South Africa who plays with a spoon in his mouth, and I copied that.
Okay. So that was an adventure, it sounds like, for sure. All right, well, Jordan, you want to...
Well, I think that it's almost a much simpler journey for me than everyone else in the band to this place because of my dad.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I grew up listening to him play his songs, and, you know, the main activity at family get-togethers was that once sort of the meal was over and that kind of thing, my dad and his two brothers would break out their instruments and start jamming, and we would sit there and sing, you know, folk songs late into the night, and it's like my favorite thing in the world. And so even though I studied classical violin, and I loved it, and I still do, it's been, you know, sort of, I think, in my blood since the beginning. And then my family moved from Canada to southern Indiana, where there's an enormous bluegrass and old-time music culture. Mm-hmm. So then I was just sort of surrounded by it even more. So I think it's in my roots.
Okay. So follow-up question for you then.
Okay.
Is, would you consider yourself a violin player or a fiddler at this point? Because they have some connotations, you know.
They do. You know, I like to think that I'm both. I think I do both. Most of the time I identify more as a violinist, I'd say, just because, you know, I'm not even sure why, other than the arrangements and my own writing, I think, tends more towards violin than fiddle.
Mm-hmm.
So I love to play bluegrass, I love to play old time, and I love to fiddle, but usually when I'm doing something that I've written, it's going to sound more like a violin part.
Okay. I mean, I would personally agree with that, just having listened to your stuff and the arrangements that you make, which I think is one of the things that gives you guys such a unique sound, because it does have those down-home elements, but then it's got that orchestral feel as well. So you want to give us a little background on how you got into this?
Yeah, I think I was trained pretty classically. You know, I went through, like, orchestras on Saturdays and Wednesdays and all sorts of pre-college things, and then going to IU. But throughout all of that, I've sort of had an interest in, you know, like, I was in Latin American ensemble at IU, and I also played Bulgarian folk music when I was young, and I took a trip to Bulgaria, and we met, my teacher's teacher, which was a pretty big deal, and that was a really fun experience because, you know, my mom's also from Montenegro, and just when I was young, the concept that everyone has, like, a national music or, like, an ethnic, you know, something to them that's, like, very sort of personal and idiomatic, you know, mm-hmm. like, that kind of is a really unique way to express yourself. But in terms of the band, I actually got to see them play in Bloomington. And it was really fun because this was right before I joined the band. I saw them play, and it just sort of, I don't know how to describe it, but it's like when people your age are, I don't know, it was really fun. And I just thought to myself, wow, like, that's really cool. like, you know, and then, hey, we need a cellist, you know. So it just sort of, like, you know, tuned into that. But, yeah, it's been a fun experience combining all of these different elements together.
All right. So my follow-up then for Maria is, well, it's actually two parts, I guess. Number one, going back to the interesting nature of your sound and how it's really hard to define, I think one of the big reasons for that is you. Because you don't find a cello player in, you know, every folk band that's out there. In fact, you don't find them in just about any folk band that's out there. Which is funny because you guys, you know, all met in Indiana, and I just saw a band, I don't know if you guys know them, from Bloomington, called Murder by Death the other day. Love those guys. They're really good friends of ours. And, of course, they feature one of the world's only rock cellists, Sarah, who's absolutely amazing. So, I guess, can you just tell me, coming from your perspective, moving into this, what do you think it is that you add and what do you bring to the sound that isn't present in other bands of this type?
I think that what the cello can offer a group like this is the flexibility and versatility of almost like two instruments in one. Even, you know, like there are like going, you know, I'm doing like slapping strings, you know, and it's very, very bass-like, and I essentially function as a bass player, but, you know, in other songs, I'm much more lyrical in ways, and, you know, it's just interesting, there'll be some songs where I don't do any pizzicato, and I'm mostly lyrical, and other songs where I just put my bow down, because I'm not going to need it, so I think that, and, you know, there are just so many colors, you know, and also considering the range of the cello as well, you know, I mean, I can just, staying down in the lowest octave of the instrument can provide such a different sound than if I were to just, you know, stay on the A string. So I think that that versatility is something that's really nice for, you know, the group to have the options.
Okay. And I think, you know, as a listener, you can definitely hear that. It gives you guys sort of a more interesting range than a lot of other, you know, string bands have. So I definitely enjoy your parts for that reason.
Thanks, yeah.
And then moving on to our percussionist, Chris, how did you, you know, get involved in the whole folk music idea?
Well, you know, I've always had a pretty varied interest in the styles of music that I like. Mm-hmm. I grew up listening to jazz and classical and barbershop. My dad's family were all barbershop singers.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so that's
They're
kind
amazing.
Of... that.
Sorry.
And that, so that's sort of how I grew up listening to those very... disparate styles. And then when I went to college for percussion, of course, and I just kind of assumed that I would have an orchestra job someday. Mm-hmm. And I do love playing orchestral percussion, but at the same time, while I was doing my official degree, I was also exploring ethnic percussion, because there's a lot of it. Oh man, there's just tons of ethnic percussion all over the world. And it also is a foundation of a lot of the orchestral percussion that I was studying. It's just sort of the historical background. So as I was exploring that, I discovered that I just really enjoyed playing it a lot. And my teachers were always saying, you know, don't pigeonhole yourself. You know, don't put blinders on and say, I'm only going to do this one thing and I'm just going to ignore everything else. It's professionally not a good move, and it's creatively not a good move. Mm-hmm. So I just kind of had this broad interest, and when the opportunity came up that we could all get together to play, I jumped at the chance, because not only was it giving me an opportunity to explore these traditional percussion styles from all over the world that I had been kind of teaching myself over the last several years, but it was original music, and mm-hmm. I, you know, I would be able to explore my own creativity, not just what, you know, what rhythms I could regurgitate that I had studied, and I learned this rhythm comes from Cuba, and it is called this, and you play it here. So it really gave me an opportunity to explore my own interests and how I could coalesce them all into one unique sound.
Okay. And I think your background in all of the different types of music that you learn does show through. One of the things I said in my review of your album was, you know, how much, even though you are sort of within that, whatever you want to call it, but string folk genre, you know, a lot of the different songs had a different feel or a different sound to them. And I think part of the reason for that was because, you know, the percussion was so varied. You know, for instance, you could have Senorita, you know, that sounds like a Latin song.
Right.
And, you know, all of you guys had something to do with that, but, you know, the percussion also brought a lot of that into it.
And in that song in particular, I remember when we were in the studio, I would kind of come out with my drum nerd stuff, and I was like, well, in traditional Mexican and Cuban music, which are each separate thing, you know, you would use this, and it would go here, and the song might, you know, have this break here and then end on a stop rather than a slowdown and all. So in that particular song, it's a little more of the straight traditional styles that I had kind of worked on and kind of taught myself over the last few years. But other things, like The End of the World, for instance, is very, it's just sort of my own thing. And also Going is sort of, it's sort of a bluegrassy piece, but there's no drums in bluegrass traditionally, mm-hmm. so I just sort of, it's kind of a boom-chick, boom-chick, boom-chick sort of thing, but then I kind of get a little crazy with the solos in there a little exciting.
I can't complain about crazy.
Yeah.
It makes stuff interesting, and that's what you're going for, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, you did mention a couple of songs right there off of the latest album. So I want to talk about that album for just a couple minutes. And sort of how it came about. Because it's not just something that you guys did on your own. This is actually your third album. And the first two you did as a quartet. But this one you decided to bring in another influence, which is Dreadanna's father, David. Who, before we say anything else, I just have to say, damn, that guy is an amazing lyricist.
I know he is.
I mean, I'm a writer, and so more than most music people, when they're writing, I focus on the lyrics.
Yeah.
And, like, it's some of the best stuff that I've ever heard, period. And you guys are all shaking your head. Obviously, you agree as well.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I sort of, it feels really nice to get his stuff out there, mm-hmm. because growing up with it, I've sort of had this feeling my whole life of, like, how come my dad isn't as famous as Bob Dylan? Because he's just as good. You know what I mean?
You know, I agree with that. Like, you say it laughingly, but, I mean, granted, I've only heard, what, like, 10, how many were on that
ten
album?
Ten songs? Yeah.
But those 10 songs are pretty impressive, so... Yeah.
I didn't grow up with David's songs, but as soon as I first started playing the banjo, I was playing his songs, and mm-hmm. He was one of the first ways that I became really acquainted with folk music beyond, you know, Bob Dylan, what everybody knows.
Mm-hmm. So I guess this is going to be unfair to the three of you a little bit, but Dreadanna, would you just tell us a little bit about your father, because he seems like one interesting guy.
He's really, you're going to hear quite a bit about him throughout the show tonight as
okay.
well, but he is, you know, one of those eccentric, wacky geniuses. He writes constantly.
Well, so am I, so I can relate.
Okay.
Well, at least the first two, I don't know.
He's been, I think writing has been the constant in his life in one form or another. He's had a lot of different careers. Mm-hmm. When my parents met, he was a dock worker in Israel. And then he spent 20 years as a journalist. And then he was a truck driver for a couple of years, which, you know, that's obvious.
Yeah, it definitely plays through on several of the songs.
But he's been a writer always, and he writes plays. He's had plays produced in New York and in Chicago, and he's written songs and a couple of novels as well. So.
Okay. So he doesn't really settle down on one thing too long. He's kind of all the way out there on everything, huh?
Absolutely, and actually one of his more recent interests, he's started painting as well, and I mean his paintings are phenomenally beautiful, so I think he's just
he's just copying off Adela there, that's what that is.
I think he's just creative in so many ways that it's really hard to limit it to one genre for him.
Okay.
So. He's the most artistic human being you could ever meet with a very gruff exterior at the same time.
Gotcha. Well, a lot of artists are like that, too. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, we don't all have to be polished like you guys when you're going up on the stage and everybody sees you, you know? We can be crazy recluses and do our thing. Mm-hmm. So I guess then, can you guys just tell us a little bit about how the idea to sort of join forces and take those songs that he'd written and produce them as a Harp with Rising project came about? Whoever wants to feel that.
Well, you know, I think he and I have been talking for years about trying to do something together. Mm-hmm. He never really recorded in the studio before. We did a couple of, you know, basement tape sessions type thing and had a lot of fun with it. And so we'd been wanting to do something for a really long time. And then, you know, Harp with Rising is my, you know, my main project in my life.
Mm-hmm.
And he loves the band. And so he was started sort of hearing in his head, I think, some collaborations, and so were we. And we'd also recorded a few of his songs on our first two albums. They're mostly our originals, but we did put a couple of his songs on there as well, and we love his stuff. We want to do a whole album of it, and if we could have him do it with us, then that was even better. So.
Okay. Well, it seems to have worked out well, at least in my opinion, and in the opinion of a lot of people that I've talked to. I mean, it's one of those albums that when you play it for other people and they hear it, they immediately get it. I mean, I've had, you know, musician friends of mine who just, you know, heard one song and they're like, I'm going to cover that. And it's just wow. Right there, you know, 30 seconds in, I'm going to cover that, you know. So I think it really does speak to a lot of people. And it's a great combination because it does have, you know, both that incredible quality of lyrics and the incredible quality of musicianship that you guys bring to it. So I don't know. I guess what I'm saying is congratulations. But, you know, like I said, you did have two albums that came out before that. And from what Jordana tells me, you've got a plan to do another one this year.
Yes.
And then possibly another follow-up with David the next year. That's five albums in 5 years, if my math is correct. And I'm not a math guy, but
yes. That's
a pretty blistering pace for any band. Do you guys feel like that's a lot, or is it just something that comes so naturally to you at this point that, you know, you just want to get in the studio and put more music out there?
I think it feels very natural. I think that if you start feeling static, it ends up being a lot less fun and a lot less challenging at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
I think just always feeling it, you're creating something new and pushing yourself and always being able to, you know, say different things and not get stuck in any one genre or get stuck with any set of songs, anything like that.
Yeah, I mean, I think between our writing and my dad's writing, we just have a lot of material.
Mm-hmm. We have a waiting list.
And, like, we get antsy. We finish an album, and we're super stoked about it, and we release it, and then we're like, okay, let's do the next one.
Right.
Let's keep, you know, I just, it doesn't feel that crazy, I think, to us, just because we've always got new stuff that we want to record, so... Mm-hmm.
Well, I know a lot of bands who are like that. I mean, even if they do go out and play, you know, 300 shows a year, they want new stuff. They want to be able to get something out there that's stuck in their head, and they want to just, you know, get it out on a track. I mean, they'll play an album for 3 months and be like, okay, what's next?
Yeah.
That's kind of the vibe I'm getting from you guys. So I guess... That's my next question. What is next? What do you guys see for the future of the bands?
You guys want to take this?
Well, I mean, first things first, I guess we're going to get in the studio and record our album. So, I mean, that's something that's immediately on the horizon. But I think in terms of the future is playing more shows, playing festivals, getting bigger and better, and I guess exploring the genre as well. I know me personally, like, I'm getting really excited about the different, you know, bass, cello stuff, so I mean, I'm gonna look for more technique ways and more things that I can do, so I guess that's just sort of an exciting element to keep us going.
Yeah, I'm always exploring, as I previously alluded, I'm always exploring new percussion styles and things, so
mm-hmm.
I've got some technique things that I'm working on that I'm hoping that to put into some new material when the right song comes around that they would fit with. So there's that aspect for me, I know, that, which is sort of a short to medium term kind of thing. I know we're, you know, I just had a baby, my wife and I, at the end of last year, so we kind of took the end of last year slowly, the band did, so that I could, you know, spend some new daddy time.
Mm-hmm.
So this year we hit the ground running in January, and we're kind of as each month goes, we're building more shows every month. So we're looking forward to touring a lot and going to a lot of new places mm-hmm. that we haven't been before, and really trying to expand our fan base.
Yeah. One thing I'm looking forward to is keeping the shows varied, because I really like that we'll play big festivals where, you know, you get to play to, you know, a very big crowd of people, and then at the same time, even, you know, small house concerts and things like that where you can see the expression on everybody's faces mm. while you're playing.
Mm.
We're also doing the Bluegrass Mass. We have some fun collaborations coming up, and I know in the past we played with the Bath Philharmonia, and I guess that's another element of, you know, different ensembles. And so next week we'll be playing with the Eastern Kentucky University.
Northern
Kentucky University. and so that's another
Kentucky,
element.
We don't care.
So,
yeah. You know how you can screw
well,
it up.
We,
it's all
we
good.
Played with Western Kentucky University, so she's just going to okay. assume
yeah,
that Eastern is next.
Directions. But yeah, that's also a fun collaboration. You know, we get to play with a choir, and, you know, mm-hmm. again, we're mostly taking a part that has already been written, but we really are adding a lot to it. So I guess, you know, in terms of different musical styles, it'd be fun to do more collaborations like that as well.
Okay. And I guess, you know, Chris mentioned something interesting as far as sort of opening up new markets, which is something that any band in your position, who's not already world famous, I guess, has to do. And I know this is your first time playing here at the Beachland Tavern. Is this your first time in Cleveland in
yeah.
general?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So how do you feel people react to your music when they first hear it live? I mean, what's the kind of feedback that you've been getting?
I mean, we've played through some pretty enthusiastic crowds lately.
Yeah.
We've been having a great tour, and people are... I think the crowds are having a great time, which is wonderful. You know,
mm-hmm.
it's kind of a hard question to answer, because, I mean, from our experience, they're digging it, and we're digging it. We're having a good time. You know,
since we play a variety of venues, we've had kind of fun watching people's different reactions, because, you know, we'll play at a folk club, and, you know, in some ways we are what they're expecting, in some ways we're not.
Right.
And so there are people who sometimes wouldn't necessarily be into the more classical aspects of what we do and the more rock aspects of what we do, but then they're willing to, you know, to give it a try because of the folk element of what we do.
Mm-hmm.
And then we've also ended up, you know, in strange situations where, like, we were in a couple years ago in a hip-hop bar in New York, and all these people had never seen a banjo before, and they were totally into it. It was really fun.
Cool.
Yeah.
I guess, you know, that's sort of an interesting part about being such an eclectic band, because it kind of works for you and against you in some ways. You know, I know as a writer, they want you to be able to nail absolutely everything you do down to a specific genre, because otherwise they don't know how the hell to market it.
Mm-hmm.
And as a band, you know, the big companies obviously want the same thing. You know, they want to say, this is
yeah.
an all-country band, this is an indie rock band, even though they're not indie anymore and they're making
right.
millions of,
yeah,
you know, whatever it is. Exactly.
I think it's harder to get people to listen to you
uh-huh.
if you cover many genres, but then once they do, I think it's easier to get people like you.
Right, right. Because you do play into so many different aspects, and because, you know, like you say, even if they are mostly a folk fan, they'll hook on to the folk stuff that you guys do, and that'll bring them into the other parts.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess my next question then is, what do you feel is the best way? Just because I talk to so many bands, and they're all trying to figure out a new model to survive in the current system where you basically can't sell music anymore, you know, it's all, you know, what you can do to survive. What have you guys found is the best way to promote your band and to get people to hook on to you and then become fans?
Well, Rebecca is a publicity machine. We, you know, everyone in the band has a job
mm-hmm.
that's outside of the creative musical aspect, and it's the less fun part, but it's super necessary for running your own business. We have to treat it like, you know, like we're running a business. And so I think we take it very seriously. And we know that we have to push ourselves in many different ways in order to succeed. That we, you know, we can rehearse as much as we want and love the music as much as we want, but if you're playing to no one, then you don't have a career.
Right.
So, you know, we're always trying to think of new creative publicity strategies. And Rebecca is mainly in charge of that, but everybody sort of is constantly thinking of things and, you know, sending out messages to friends and asking, you know, for street teams in certain cities and sending out... We do a lot of press releases and interviews with local magazines, papers, radio stations, that kind of thing. And, I mean, I think... I know that a lot of people have sort of gone to the idea of, oh, we'll just give your music away because nobody's going to pay for it anyways.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not actually been our experience, honestly. Our CD sales are our lifeblood. So we, you know, once you get the people in, I think they'll pay for the music. It's mm-hmm. more about getting them into the venue in the mm-hmm. first place.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and we found people are much more responsive to, you know, when they come to a show, they want to leave with the CD.
Right.
You know, if they've never gone to a show before, they might not look you up on iTunes. But
right. Well, it becomes almost a souvenir at that point. You
right.
know, not
exactly.
not just a music product, but hey, I saw these guys; they were awesome.
Yeah,
know?
Right.
It's kind of, you know, you have that to remember the show. So
it makes it a more personal right. connection when they have a physical thing that they can take home with them. And a lot of times we'll have signed it, and so they'll, you know, they'll have this memento from the occasion of them coming to see us, and it kind of makes it a more personal connection. More like a one-on-one with us and them.
Awesome. So just one last thing I want to ask you guys, just to give people who might not have heard you a little bit of info on your music. I'll let you choose from all three of your CDs that are already out, but could each of you just tell us, you know, what your favorite song is that you've done and just a little bit about it so that people can get an idea of what you're about. And since we started left last time, let's start right this time.
Oh, man, you got to make me think.
Haha, put you on the spot.
Wow. I have favorites from all three of the albums, and I kind of always go back and forth as to which one is kind of my favorite at the moment.
Well, pick one they're not going to pick, because you got the you got the first choice.
I think I would pick, oh gosh, California, 1850, and gosh, four. I don't look at the titles a lot when I'm, you know.
Although it is good to know your own band songs.
It does help to know the title.
To be fair, I can't remember my phone number, so it's kind of the same thing.
That same thing, you know. It's just, it's such a lush song. And this is off of Dead Man's Hand, the second album.
Mm-hmm.
And it has a great story. This came a lot from Rebecca's childhood growing up in Northern California, and it's got a lot. It's all about the gold rush and sort of that life that goes around that, but from a little bit of a different angle than you would than you might initially guess. But just the arrangement that we did for it is one of my favorites of all of our pieces, and it's a beautiful song to listen to.
Okay, Maria.
Well, I had a little bit of time to think about it, and it's hard to pick. But on the last album, you know, one song in particular that I really love is "Truck Stop Mama," and that's just when I listen to it on the CD in my car, I play that about 5 times, you know, just like it's so, and that, you know, since it's on that third album, it features, you know, David Reed, right, you know, so, you know, he's singing on that, and the lyrics, it's so, you know, lyrically, it's like such a raw and very honest song, you know, and you can really feel the there's so many different elements. Right, you know, it's just kind of vulnerable and true. I don't know, it just really resonates. And in terms of, you know, instrumentally, I love the build-up of it. I mean, it just has such a great arc, you know, it's just, like, really satisfying to listen to, you know, and it just, mm-hmm. like, the high point, it's just really, you know, got that. good.
For those of you who can't see, she's punching the air and grunting.
Maria's Italian. Yeah.
She talks a little bit with her hands, and this is an audio interview.
A better video interview, but...
Well, I've got my camera. If you want to do this over again, we can take a video.
Here, I won't use my hands, but I'll say it's quite good, and it's very wonderful, but then again, you know, I love all of the songs.
Okay. Yeah. And Jordana?
I think, I'm going to say, and this is probably just this moment in time, and only because you're forcing me to say one.
I know, but, it's like picking between your children, right?
Yeah. It's true.
I'm going to say that You Can Only Follow is one of my favorite songs. And it's specifically because of the voice. My daddy always told me, no, don't throw first, and don't you never drink quit if you're dying of thirst. I mean, even saying those words, I sort of get chills because, I mean, first of all, my dad wrote that, and it resonates so deeply with me because, you know, at any moment in my life, if I'm struggling through something, those words are just, they're strong words, you know, and he did say that to me, and he has taught me, you know, there's nothing that should make you give up, nothing, literally, absolutely, if somebody is trying to take you to your end, that should not make you give up,
mm-hmm.
you know, and especially as a, you know, as an independent musician, and we're trying to forge our own path in this, you know, sort of undefinable genre, it can be so hard sometimes just to say, you know, how, you know, we gotta pay our bills, and all I really want to do is make music, mm-hmm. you know, and so it's something that goes through my head basically whenever I need it to.
Okay, I guess that's a good thing for a song when you can use it to apply to your own life every time you need a little bit of strength there.
Yeah. So. Yeah.
All right, and Rebecca, you're.
Well, for me, the same answer as Chris is that it changes around depending on the day, but in our live shows, the songs that I've kind of been getting most of a kick out of, the instrumental of Next Year's Rain from our second album, I always have so much fun doing. I love playing Going My Way and Nowhere Land from the new album. Those are particularly exciting. But I think in terms of just any song that I had to pick, we don't perform it because it works as, you know, David's song to sing, but Out of Sight from the new album, whenever I just like need to be by myself and listen to something, I find myself going to that song a lot. I love it. I like the kind of the interplay between folk and classical. It feels very symphonic in a way, but it's still definitely like it works equally well as something where it's slightly symphonic or something where it's, you know, just David alone with his guitar.
Nice. And I like the little bit of narcissism you guys brought up there, because you all listen to your own music driving around in the car. I mean, geez.
I think there's something about this album where I've been able to kind of sit and listen to it and not really think, almost think of it separately from what we did.
Okay. I guess I can see that, because, you know, like we discussed, it is sort of a joint venture, so I'm not knocking you or anything, I just, you know... I don't sit there and read my old short stories every day, but I guess I could. I do when I'm editing, which I really need to do on a lot of them because, oh my God.
I think there's something different about this album for us also, just because with our other albums, we were recording all songs that we'd been performing for a really long time
mm-hmm.
before we recorded it. And with this, we had 2 weeks to, you know, put it all together and record it all. And so I think we were able to think of it more abstractly afterwards. Or more objectively afterwards, because we had done it, you know, in a short period of time,
mm-hmm.
and a very intense period of time.
Okay. So I guess that means that you guys probably have a few songs that are going to be coming up tonight that you're planning on putting on the next album as well. So
yeah, exactly. Yep. Yeah.
Definitely look forward to hearing some of those for the first time then. So I just want to wrap up once again by telling everybody... the band is Harpeth Rising. They are absolutely amazing. You really need to check them out. If you trust my opinion at all, which I hope you do, because you've been sitting here and listening to us for 40 minutes, and it would seem rather stupid if you didn't, you know, like my website. Really, honestly, they are one of the best finds that I have had the fortune to stumble upon since we started No Surf Music. And I'm really glad they could be here in Cleveland for the first time tonight. And once again, the last album is billed as David Greenberg and Harpeth Rising, which is important to note for you alphabet freaks.
Yeah.
It's called The End of the World. It truly is amazing. Came out July of 2012. So go out, go to iTunes, whatever you got to do, go to your independent record store, get a copy. And if you don't agree that it's one of the best albums you've ever heard, I'll pay for it. You'll have to track me down, but I'll still pay for it. So once again, thanks to all four of you. It was really terrific having you for a Burning River Fireside Chat. This is your host, Jason D. Diesel Hammond. I'm signing off. Have a good one.
This has been a No Surf Music Burning River Fireside Chat. This is your host, Jason D. Diesel Hammond, signing off. Remember, No Surf Music is your source for the best in Americana, alt-country, indie rock, and more. For original reviews and interviews, visit nosurfmusic.com.